18 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Sunday, October 19th, 2014. You're listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us this Sunday evening live from Washington. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Amongst our top stories this evening, a high-powered business delegation comprising the country's top finance and revenue experts is expected to visit Norway this coming week to exchange ideas on how to revive the ailing economy using the country's natural resources.
The major purpose of the visit is to assist the governments of Zimbabwe to have first-hand interaction with the Norwegian authorities, because Norway is one of the countries that came out of the doldrums.
The Zimbabwe Farmers Union says the closure of the agro-focused cotton business Cargill is a blow to the farming community, which was showing signs of recovery in recent months.
The pulling out of Cargill is a terrible blow. They were contracting over 20,000 households to grow at least 2 or 3 acres of cotton each year.
And as usual, we have the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo. A high-powered four-man business delegation comprising the country's top finance and revenue experts is expected to visit Norway this coming week to exchange ideas on how to revive the ailing economy using the country's natural resources. The delegation is led by the Macroeconomic and Financial Management Institute of Eastern and Southern Africa, MEFMI. MEFMI Publications and Networking Officer Gladys Siwela says Zimbabwe is expected to benefit from the experience of Norway, which went through an economic crisis but used its natural resources to become one of the leading economies to date. Ms. Siwela tells us more on the business tour.
We have a delegation of 4 officials from Zimbabwe. That is the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance and Economic Development, Mr. Manungo, the Senior Division Chief, who is also an economist at the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, Mr. Simon Nyarota, the Commissioner General of the Revenue Authority, Mr. Gershon Pasi, and the Acting Chief Executive of the Chamber of Mines, Mr. Isaac Kwesi. The delegation will be led by the MEFMI Executive Director, Dr. Caleb Fundanga. And the major purpose of the visit is to assist the governments of Zimbabwe to have first-hand interaction with the Norwegian authorities, because Norway is one of the countries that came out of the doldrums. It has one of the strongest economies in the world. So it really is to attempt to understand what it is that Norway put into place and was implementing in order for them to make sure that their natural resources contributed to the fiscus in order to boost their national economy.
How important is this for Zimbabwe? What do you think they'll be able to learn while in Norway?
For Norway, if you read through the history of Norway, it had one of the worst economies in the world. But because they then put into place strategies that helped them to make sure that they harness whatever resources that were coming from the extraction of gas, that is what then boosted their economy. So what we are looking at here is, what can Zimbabwe learn from policy formulation and implementation in order to change the fortunes of Zimbabwe? Because what we are looking at is a situation where we are saying, when people harness natural resources, there is great potential. And how do people then negotiate? It actually comes to the issue of negotiating. How do you negotiate with those people that want to partner in the extraction of natural resources?
And how long is the trip for?
It's a 5-day trip. And what we are doing is we are visiting various government institutions in Norway so that we get first-hand experience from the people that were actually involved in turning the fortunes of Norway. Some of the institutions that we are going to be visiting, the CMI, CMI is the Chair Michelson Institute. And with this institute, what they are really involved in is research for third world countries, developing countries, countries that have a potential to exploit their resources for their own benefit.
That was MEFMI Publications and Networking Officer Gladys Siwela speaking to us from Harare before traveling to Norway. The Zimbabwe Farmers Union says the closure of the agro-focused cotton business Cargill is a blow to the farming community, which was showing signs of recovery in recent months. Cargill was contracting over 20,000 farmers under its cotton contract scheme countrywide, but is closing, citing operational challenges. The executive director of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union, Paul Zakaria, says the closure of Cargill will negatively affect thousands of cotton farmers in the country. Cargill announced last week that some of the reasons for its closure included overcapacity amongst ginners, shrinking margins, high levels of farmer credit defaults, and side marketing. Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri speaks to Zakaria on the issue.
Well, that's a very sad development, really. It is not expected in an economy that is beginning to come out of economic doldrums. You would want to see more investment coming into those categories, agriculture, mining, etc., and in particular agriculture. You would want to see a lot of investment being attracted. So the pulling out of Cargill is a terrible blow. They were contracting over 20,000 households to grow at least 2 or 3 acres of cotton each year. So that is a huge reduction in terms of investment in that regard.
The company is citing defaulting farmers and those who were failing to honor their contracts as some of the reasons why it was affected by this problem or why it has reached this decision. What's your reaction to this?
Yes, there was a lot of side marketing of cotton, and I would not entirely blame the farmers for side marketing cotton. Even the contractors themselves, they had a hand in that. The mere fact that a contractor who did not finance a particular crop would go and purchase that crop from a farmer who was contracted elsewhere, it does show you that the two are already conniving. They are in that conspiracy. So we have Agricultural Marketing Authority that regulates all these issues, and they have mechanisms of trying to control that. But then where you have hundreds of thousands of growers, you know, dealing with 12 to 15 contractors, it becomes quite a huge task for an authority like the Agricultural Marketing Authority. But however, some of the factors that go into side marketing, that feed into side marketing, are to do with the yields. The yields, you know, over the years have been very low. And sometimes if a farmer then takes all his crop to go he takes his crop back to the contractor, the value that they realize out of their cotton, sometimes it's way, way below the amount that they were in dollar terms that they were contracted for. So they would make huge losses. So the low yields would then force the farmers to side market and then get at least something out of that, thereby defaulting.
That was Zimbabwe Farmers Union Executive Director Paul Zakaria speaking with Jonga Kandemiri in Harare. Community groups focused on health in Zimbabwe have teamed up with the Minister of Health to help spread the message about the threat of Ebola. In keeping with Health Minister David Parerenyatwa's emphasis on prevention, many have started to train members of various communities to educate others about the disease and how it can be prevented. Zimbabwe Ahead, operating in such areas as Chimanimani, Chipinge, Buhera, Gutu, Mashingo, Berengwa, and Gokwe is one of these. The organization's director, Regis Matimati, says in Gokwe they are training about 250,000 people to educate others on prevention. Matikiti tells Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakelele that he is impressed by how informed he's found many to be about Ebola.
The experience that we have, the Zimbabwean community, we recently have come out of devastating cholera, and it has sort of left us organized, and our awareness is sort of at a very high, so it is very easy, and our people are very receptive. And I'll say I'm actually impressed, because I'm coming from one of the districts. The level of awareness is very impressive. People are very conversant around Ebola, and, you know, it might come, but, yeah, we are reassuring them so that if everybody is putting their efforts together, it will not come into the country at all.
And in the event that it does come, do you feel secure that there is enough in place to make sure that it doesn't spread like it has been doing in West Africa?
I wouldn't want to say we are that very much prepared, because I know, you know, it's a resource thing. We want to make sure the districts have, you know, protective housing in place, enough, you know, transport to get to the areas where they might be needed at short notice. We also want to make sure communication is improved in terms of disease surveillance. But we know we've done very well at national level. I'm privy to some of the things that are in place. But like I've said, it can never be enough until we are certain that it be those of in the West African countries that are hard hit at the moment.
You've mentioned that Zimbabwe is overcoming this cholera outbreak. Do you fear that the threat of Ebola is going to usurp efforts to get more resources to fight diseases like cholera, HIV, TB, cancer, etc.?
So definitely be, you know, a competition for resources, given the urgency that Ebola requires. If we're not so careful, we might then tend to downplay some of the challenges and sometimes some of the gains that we've had as a country regarding HIV AIDS management, cholera preparedness might stumble a bit. But I'm not too worried about cholera coming back, because the hygiene level are quite up, and also the things that are required for, you know, Ebola preparedness are more or less the same. It's all general hygiene, particularly with the levels of information dissemination at the moment. The people, yeah, will be able to deal with it, but like I said, Ebola is quite hard hitting, sudden onset, and once one case is discovered, you know, it's like a flare of a fire, and everybody might start running around, and then, yeah, potentially jeopardize some of the critical issues that are being managed at the moment.
Regis Matimati is the director of Zimbabwe Ahead, a health advocacy group based in Harare. He spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiyake Mwakelele.
I am Rice Kagona, founder and band leader of the Bundu Boys. And you are listening to Studio 7.
This is Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. We're going out to you on the 4930, 4940, and 15455 shortwave frequencies, and on the 909 medium wave or AM frequency. And now we go to Tatenda Gumbo with the Youth Forum.
You are now listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. Today, I'm gladly joined by a youth who's here in the United States, in the state of North Carolina, on a professional fellows program with the U.S. State Department. His name is Samuel Dimairo. Samuel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Tatenda.
Samuel, we talked a little bit before the interview, and you have your hands in a couple of different things. Tell me, what do you do back home in Zimbabwe?
I'm an entrepreneur, and as you know, all entrepreneurs do many things. So on the co-founder side, there's a company called Chengetedzai Depository Company Limited. It's the Central Securities Depository of Zimbabwe, and its role is to provide clearing and settlement services for registered securities exchanges. So among them, the only one right now is the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, as you know. And that company has gone live, and 30% of the counters that are trading on the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange are now electronic. So when I say I'm a co-founder of that, it's a project that's very close to me that I started working on when I was very young. I was still a teenager and I started working on it. Then I'm the managing director and co-founder of Water Group, which is what I spend a lot of my time doing daily. And we mainly specialize in technology solutions, business projects, and the last is consulting services.
I understand you're on attachment with a company in North Carolina.
Right now I'm in Charlotte interning at a company called QC FinTech. It's a technology and innovation hub for financial services technology. And they basically run incubation programs and a hub for entrepreneurship development, you know, working with the startup communities and the like.
Tell me more about your upbringing and how you've gotten to the space you are now.
I grew up in Zimbabwe. My primary school was at Lewisham Primary School, secondary school was at Prince Edward. And I did something rather awkward and took an unconventional route of dropping out of school after my O-levels. When I dropped out, I started pursuing a chartered accounting career, and I started working on a project which was my dream of automating the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange. That passion and dream came from the fact that I used to invest in the stock market from the age of 15 years. And, you know, as I invested, I always used to wonder why it was easy to get information and prices of securities being traded in markets overseas, yet the one that was just less than 2 kilometers away from me, I had to walk a kilometer or two to go and get data on it.
Some might say, of course, it's very unconventional following this dream. What did that mean for you at that age? And did you know that you'd be able to make it?
I didn't know that I was going to make it. It was a leap of faith. And one thing was sure that, okay, even when I dropped out, it was a calculated risk. So on one end, I had the safety net where I was going, you know, pursued chartered accounting. I just had a dream and I said, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be successful. I don't know how, but I am going to be successful. And, you know, that's what, you know, drove me. And I didn't have to be woken up each morning. My passion woke me up each morning to pursue what I wanted to achieve. With where I am today, I had no idea back then that I'd be in this position now. But I think it's all about having a vision and the faith.
It looks glorious when you hear a story about someone who's made it, but they never talk about the challenges. Can you talk about the challenges that you faced when you took on this venture?
For me personally, I always used to use a method of sleeping 6 to 7 hours a day, then maybe a bit longer on weekends. Even with everybody involved in the project, we all put in lots of effort and time. It was a painful exercise. The amount of time you need to dedicate is one thing. Another is that, you know, in many cases when you're developing business ideas, when there's no traction yet, you rarely ever find any money. And sometimes you actually have to pay to work. Most others are getting paid to work. So it's always a challenge. But at the end of the day, you know, money will be attracted to good ideas. And when you keep on knocking on doors and, you know, you don't give up when you get the first no, you have to keep on persevering. And sometimes getting no's is actually good feedback because it helps you refocus. The third challenge is to do with people. That, you know, when I was working on this project, at the beginning, you know, you're a young person, you're a teenager. People don't always take you seriously. And when people look at the size of the market that you're trying to serve, it actually looks ridiculous. And I think knowing what I now know, I'm just imagining how those that were older and that were in the industry for a while, they must have laughed because maybe if I was in their position, it just looked impossible to do for young men to do.
And what's your message to young people, especially those in Zimbabwe who are interested in following what they are most passionate about?
Okay, so my advice would be that for the young people, they need to think about life and their career in a global context. So, I mean, if you're in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe is too small in a global context to have any relevance in terms of the economic and business environment of the world. So, you know, with this increased globalization, you need to think about yourself as the person who's in a global context. So you have to know that in everything you're doing, you compete. Any service and product you produce is going to compete at a global level. We need to benchmark ourselves at that level.
Samuel, thank you so much for joining me on the Youth Forum. Truly an inspiring story.
Thank you very much.
That was Samuel Dimairo, who is here with the U.S. State Department Professional Fellows Program, speaking to us on the Youth Forum. This is Tatenda Gumbo, and make sure you join me next Sunday.
Thank you, Tatenda Gumbo. This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. And now to recap on today's top stories. A high-powered business delegation comprising the country's top finance and revenue experts is expected to visit Norway this coming week to exchange ideas on how to revive the ailing economy using the country's natural resources. The Zimbabwe Farmers Union says the closure of the agro-focused cotton business Cargill is a blow to the farming community, which was showing signs of recovery in recent months. Cargill was contracting over 20,000 farmers under its cotton contract scheme countrywide, but is closing, citing operational challenges. That was the news in English from Studio 7 this Sunday evening, October 19th, 2014. Stand by for Studio 7 News in Ndebele. This is Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. And I leave you with Standakile Mhlanga in Ndebele.